Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Squiggly Careers podcast. I am Helen and I'm joined by my co-host Sarah.
Hi everyone.
And this is episode 92 of the podcast, so thank you for listening to all of them. I don't know if you've listened to all 92 episodes, but this may be your first. We should probably give you a proper introduction in a second. But today, our episode today is all around negotiating at work. And in terms of what you can expect for the next half an hour or so, we're going to be covering why negotiations are an increasingly relevant skill in a squiggly career. We're also going to talk about some of our experiences of negotiating, maybe dig a little bit into the highlights and lowlights of our career negotiating experience, and we're going to really focus on practical tips. We've got 6 practical tips for you to help you to develop your negotiating skills in lots of different contexts that it might come up at work. But first, let's imagine this is your first one. So welcome to the Squiggly Careers podcast. And we should probably explain a little bit about what Squiggly Careers are and why we do a podcast on them every week. So Sarah, I'm going to hand that baton over to you.
Oh, thanks.
Pleasure.
Well, I think we actually realised that we probably end up talking about squiggly careers a lot, but very rarely actually take a bit of time just to explain what we think they are. And we probably both have our own kind of slightly different versions anyway, so it's good to keep practicing. I think from our perspective, when we came up with the idea of squiggly careers, it was a recognition and kind of an insight that the old world of predictable linear career ladders were disappearing. The idea now of a job or even a career for life is really rare. We're both in the kind of situation where you look at your kind of parents and you think, well, I'm going to have more jobs and work in more companies than my dad. And that's true today. You know, we're both still working, me and my dad both still working hard, but I've already had more jobs. And you go, that's a, in actually quite a short space of time, our experiences of work and the world of work have changed pretty quickly. It doesn't almost matter which dimension of work you look at. Sometimes we talk about why people work or where people work or what people are working on. Across every single aspect, there's usually some quite significant changes that are happening. And I think for us, we would probably kind of summarise a squiggly career using 3 words, and then there's a bit of a kind of outcome or a so what, I guess, to a squiggly career. And those 3 words are change, overwhelming and opportunity. And so the change is kind of the point we just made around going, there's just so much change happening around us, happening in our organisation, change that we're also driving for ourselves. I remember actually that change used to be one of those things in organisations where specific teams did change. It was like it was a separate thing. We'll all just keep going while these teams over here work out how to change some stuff.
Yeah.
And now I just think this is the new normal. The amount of technology and things that are happening in our economies and just the way that we're all working, change is just a constant. And it's a really interesting thing because I think often people talk about, you know, there's these like big moments of change. I just think we all just need to get used to things almost being in this constant state of flux and change, and that not necessarily being a bad thing, that can actually be a really good thing. Which is where we get onto this point about, I'm going to say them simultaneously to make us feel better, both it can be overwhelming and it can be full of opportunity. And so I think with a squiggly career, what we're not saying is, oh, this is just all way better than it's ever been before. I think it can be. I think it can be full of opportunity. And at their best, squiggly careers are brilliant. You have more freedom. You've got opportunities to fulfill your potential, feel like you're kind of making a real difference, have real purpose, lots more creativity. And I do believe that ultimately the squiggly career for all of us means that we should be able to have careers and jobs that will give us a really kind of strong sense of fulfillment, identity, and that work is a really positive contributor to our life. The flip side of that is I think squiggly careers at their worst can be really overwhelming and anxiety inducing. And it doesn't surprise me that one of our most listened to podcasts is actually on how to manage stress. And I think that just gives you a sense for, with all of that change that we started off with talking about in terms of the context, that actually you have this, the kind of the either side of the same coin of going, at one side, when it's all working out, it can be brilliant, but it doesn't take much for it to kind of flip over and then actually feel like, oh, maybe I'm losing control or I'm finding that's all kind of a bit much. And that the kind of so what of those things, which is more kind of describing what everyone's experience, is this point around ownership. We really believe that there's never been a more important moment to take control and take ownership for your career development and make sure that you've got the skills to succeed, whatever success means to you. And that actually the squiggly career means that you're going to thrive, maybe not every day in every moment. I wouldn't want to guarantee that on on our promise to people that, you know, you still have to sometimes, you know, have difficult bosses or different things might happen to you that might not be quite so great. But I do think when you think about the skills and all the different things that we talk about on the podcast, if you start developing these for yourself and really take ownership for it and kind of go, right, it's this is my career, I'm really going to care about it, invest in it, invest time and kind of energy in it. Actually, it's always those people who I see who, yes, are still having the ups and downs that we all experience at work, but broadly speaking, are going, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. And I think that's what those people always have in common. They've always taken ownership. How did it do, Helen? Was that a good summary?
Yes, it was. It was. I think people will definitely know what squiggly careers are all about now. So if we make the point then about squiggly careers and negotiation for today's podcast, why do we think it's becoming more and more important? Well, there are three reasons we think this is a useful podcast for you right now in terms of careers. The first is that you are going to be negotiating more often. The fact that we are working longer than ever, the fact that there's much more movement either in your company or outside of your company, there are kind of more points of negotiation now in your career. So we need to develop the skills so we're ready for those negotiation points so that you can start to personalise your career and take advantage of all of the opportunities to do that, whether that's about where you're working or when you're working or how you're working. There's just many more options, so we need to really hone our negotiation skills. So that's point one. The second point is, in the context of you're going to be doing it more often, we also have to recognise that lots of people don't feel that comfortable about negotiating. I think it's tied up in this financial fear or the idea that it's going to be hard negotiating or that some people are really, really difficult. Lots of people don't really like the idea of negotiating. It's a bit like the word networking. It's sort of loaded with meaning that people don't necessarily find that fun and therefore they avoid or dread it. And so we have to kind of sort of redefine what negotiation is, and therefore we can maybe look at it a bit differently from our skill set. And the last thing is that the way that squiggly careers have now opened up the job market for employers, you know, you don't have to just now work in the local area of the company. They've got much bigger talent pools that they can pull on. That means you're probably going to be competing with more people for your jobs than you were in the old staircase career. And so your ability to negotiate and craft jobs and convince people so that you can get the roles that you want to do also becomes more important. So not necessarily something that everybody loves doing. However, we've got some practical skills and tips for you so that you can develop it, but it's definitely a skill that is increasing in importance the more squiggly that careers get.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those words where we do this in workshops sometimes where we say, you know, negotiation, what are the other words that you would associate with that? And do you see it as a kind of positive, negative or neutral word? I think a lot of people would say scary, that you're going to lose. There would be quite a lot of win, negativity. And I think this definition that we found is a really good way to start to think about it, which is by a guy called Jared Cunham, who is a professor of management at MIT. He says it's negotiation is a source of empowerment. It's how we achieve things in the world. And I think that if someone said to you, well, that's what negotiation is, it's going to empower you, it's going to help you achieve things that you want to achieve. Suddenly just starting with that frame of reference and frame of mind, I think just helps you to think about basically just how relevant it is to your career happiness. So back to that squiggly career point around, you know, what does success look like to you to be able to make those things happen? It is inevitable, I think, that you need to be good at this stuff, but that you can absolutely do it in a way that works for you and that doesn't have to be tied up with some of those things that can feel a bit scary. So let's kick off by sharing some of our stories of negotiation, the highlights and kind of lowlights as Helen talks about them. So Helen, do you feel like you've done lots of negotiation in your career? Would you say it's been a kind of feature of your career so far?
Well, that's a big question. No, I don't think it has been a big feature of my career, and I actually don't think I'm brilliant at it. My husband would probably say I'm not. You know, when normally when it, for me, it really sticks out in moments of applying for new jobs. I actually normally go to my husband or you, Sarah, to get advice, because I actually think it's something that you are better at than me. But if I think about two points that really stand out for me, when I was leaving Virgin and I was going to work at Microsoft, and at the time that I was sort of negotiating the package, if you like, so, you know, my holiday and bonus and shares and all that kind of great stuff, as well as my salary, I was pregnant, which meant that because I was joining the company pregnant, they've changed the policy now, actually, but when I joined, I wasn't entitled to maternity pay. So it meant that I was going to start at that company, and then for the period of time that I had off for maternity leave, I would have no salary, and other than statutory benefits, there would be nothing. And so I was trying to negotiate various different types on my package so that I kind of wasn't so exposed financially when I joined, because it was a big thing for me. Do I stay at Virgin, where I'm going to be more financially secure in the short term because of this, or do I go to Microsoft? And I wanted to make the move, but I definitely had some financial considerations to that. And so I really looked at all the different elements that I could negotiate there, and I broke it down, whether it was about, you know, it wasn't just about my salary, because my salary wouldn't have helped me in that situation. There were other components that I was looking at, keep in touch days, all kinds of things to make that easier. And I think what I learned from that was that when you're negotiating something bigger, it can be quite useful to break it down into smaller parts. And I also learned as well, I think it's quite useful, as you progress in your career, the negotiating around what your company offers you gets a bit more complicated. Like I remember earlier in my career, like I'm talking after grad scheme, I pretty much just negotiate on my salary. I felt like I just had one thing I could negotiate. And then as I've sort of progressed in my career, the components that I've been negotiating, so holiday, shares, bonus, salary, you know, working patterns, all of that stuff, there's many more kind of elements of it. And I think that gives you a bit more flexibility when you're negotiating, because you can start to trade stuff off. And if someone says no to, well, Helen, you can't work 4 days a week, then I'll say, okay, well, let's bring this thing back on the table if you're not giving me that. So I think I did that quite well. And yeah, I definitely learned to break things down. I think when I was maybe not a non getting a job related negotiation point, when I was at Virgin, I was launching this new business for Virgin, and it was a new team. We didn't have a huge amount of money to build that business. And I remember there were lots of negotiations about, I was sort of heading up marketing, and one of my peers, really great guy called Neil, he was heading up like the development, the technology development of the app. We were building an app, and we used to have debates basically about where the money should go. Should the money, the limited pot of money, should it go on marketing and building the audience and building the community and the awareness? Or should it go on the functionality of the actual app? Now, everyone's probably sat there going, both, but it wasn't quite that neat. So we had to have regular conversations about where the money should go each time a new pot of money came into things. And I think what I learned from that was that emotion isn't the most powerful negotiation tactic. So if I, for example, was saying to Nia, well, just because it should, and because this is what people love and what they want, and we should, you know, we've got to raise awareness of it, to somebody who is a real logical thinker and who would have spreadsheets and data to support negotiation, my emotion-fueled approach just didn't work. So I think my lesson from that was, you've got to learn who you're negotiating with and understand what's going to resonate with them, because, you know, in that instance, emotion going to a data-orientated person was just like it was a lose-lose. It just didn't help us get to a point at which that we could move forward together. It probably just irritated each other. They're my particular moments, I guess, in the last 5 years that really stick out. What about you?
Well, I really remember going on a negotiation course, and it was a bit of a rite of passage, actually, at Sainsbury's. So lots of people sort of went on it when they got to a certain point in their career. It had a bit of a reputation, you know, one of those courses where you're a bit like nervous before you're even going on it. And in my case, it turns out rightly so. But we started with some like basically win-lose negotiation. quite aggressive. Basically, one of you does way better out of a negotiation than the other. And some of it, they made you sort of do in front of everyone. So it's kind of my worst case scenario. You know, you're making someone do a role play. As a kind of introvert, you're suddenly having to stand up and do this stuff that you don't feel like you're very good at anyway.
Negotiating role play. I mean, it's like a double hit.
Oh, even now, I'm just like, makes me hot just thinking about it. And with people that you work with, like every day, people, you know, like a few different levels
makes
and stuff.
It worse.
It was horrendous. I didn't enjoy that. But what was funny was when you were doing the win-lose one, so I was getting, I was made to get up and do this negotiation, and I hated it so much that I completely froze and sort of forgot to talk. So
that's one tactic.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's really funny because quite a few people I still know would have been at that course. And I sort of stonewalled with this guy. But it's not because I was doing a really good negotiating. It was because I was dying inside going, this is horrendous. I don't know what to say. I just want to leave. So I just really froze. And then I like won the negotiation by loads because this guy just got more and more frustrated and like angry at me. I mean, it does show that that works. But afterwards, I mean, I think I was like, I was probably like soaked in sweat. I wanted to leave, wanted to go home. It was actually traumatic. And I think at that point, and actually quite a lot of feedback at the end of that course, and like the first point of my feedback was, we don't think like win-lose negotiation is quite for you. And I was like, yeah, what do you reckon? So I was quite scarred by that. And I think that probably reinforced lots of like the old perceptions of negotiation, which is why previously I've probably labelled myself as somebody who isn't good at negotiation. Because I sort of had that, it's funny, isn't it, how those moments then influence so much of what you think about yourself and what you're good at. So I came away going, oh, well, that's not for me. It's just not one of the things I'm good at, but that's okay. Those are the things. And then actually, I think over the course of probably the last 6 or 7 years, I've realised that I am a good negotiator, particularly where there's kind of a win-win scenario. Yeah. And the thing I think I'm good at is actually putting myself in other people's shoes. So I think before I've negotiated anything for myself, I've always been good at almost like scenario planning and thinking through the implications for the other person, the organisation, quite good at thinking about options and possibilities. So not being too black and white in terms of what the outcome might be. Probably because I like reflecting and thinking things through. I sort of go, okay, so this might happen, that'd be quite interesting. And I can think through all of that before I start having conversations. So I really remember talking to Sainsbury's about wanting to work a 4-day week, which now probably doesn't sound that controversial, but at the time there wasn't very many people I knew at my level working 4 days. And I wanted to work 4 days so I could do Amazing If, more of this sort of stuff. And most of the time, it was people who wanted to work 4 days. It was because they got kids. There wasn't very many role models. There wasn't really a kind of blueprint for how you did this. So it felt like quite a brave thing to do. But actually, I think I could see it from Sainsbury's perspective in terms of going, well, actually, it's quite useful to have some other role models of people doing flexibility in different ways. That's a good thing for them. Mm. I'm about to move into a new job. So actually, this could be quite good timing because we can frame and think about the objectives of that job starting from a capacity of a 4-day week rather than a 5-day week, and let's figure out whether that would still work in terms of what the role needs to deliver. It was a kind of good moment in time, and also really practically they can save 20% of their money because they're going to pay me 20% less and I'm an expensive person. And so I think that really gave me the confidence to have the conversation, and it doesn't mean I kind of wasn't nervous, but it did mean that I could go into it understanding that this wasn't just about me, that there was something in it for them too. And I think that just...
Such a good tip. You are really good at it, really. It's like a Sarah super skill, I think.
It's a slightly weird one, I think. But it's sort of this idea of being able to kind of hypothesise and just play out different options and possibilities. And I think if you can do that, whether you do that like me, I sort of do that in my head because I am sort of quite a thinker and think in my head, but I think the other way to do it is to like talk to somebody about it and try and just sketch people out. Some people are particularly good at helping you do that and asking really good questions, a bit like Helen said, you know, she'll often go to like Gareth, her husband, or to me, and probably what I help her to do is to think about all of those things, so you just feel, I think, more prepared and more confident. And so now I'm sort of much more comfortable saying, oh, I am a good negotiator. I'm probably not the person to put... There are very few, actually, win-lose negotiations at work, I would say. I think the ones you sort of see in life, the classic examples were often like buying a car and buying a house.
Yeah.
So I probably shouldn't buy too many cars and houses. But I think in terms of work negotiation, I'm much more confident now that I can do it and do it well and in a way that works for everyone.
So unfortunately, we can't bring you into every negotiation that we have at work. And that would probably help me, though. I'm actually probably going to be negotiating with you in the future. So this is probably not going well for me.
Oh, I'd not thought of that. That's absolutely brilliant.
I might need some tips, Sarah, to improve my approach to negotiation. And it just so happens that we have some. So, but you'll know what I'm doing now with these tips. You'll be like, that's Helen doing tip number 3 from my negotiation podcast. I get you. So we've got 6 tips for you, which we are going to go through. And we think these will help you to maybe prepare a little bit more for negotiations, or when you're in the moment, just think about how you might be reacting to it in a way that might be helpful. So, Sarah, shall I go through the first 3 and then you go through the second 3?
Yeah, go for it.
So tip number 1 for you is to look for areas of common ground rather than enter into conflict. And actually, there's some resources that we'll share which talks about the soft and hard approaches to negotiation and how they can really be quite disruptive. So if I'm hard negotiating with someone else who's hard negotiating, then that results in conflict. And it talks about that in that situation, it is very likely that it is a lose-lose, because neither of you are going to back down. And you can look at all the different scenarios in the link that we've got. But the point here is to really pay attention to where areas where you and the other person are already in agreement. So, for example, let's say Sarah, you know, she talked about the scenario about working fewer days in the week and changing her working patterns. Let's say that she wanted to work 4 days a week and her manager wasn't really into that. If Sarah had gone head to head on that point straight away, it could have been a lose-lose situation. So Sarah might be saying, well, all I want to do is 4 days. And the person's saying, no, you can't do your job in 4 days. It's got to be 5 days.
You get stalemate
But actually, if you could look for areas of common ground. So for example, Sarah could sort of go slightly different tack and say, okay, what's important to you about the team over the next 12 months? And that person might say, I don't know, well, team motivation and our internal brand. Sarah could then say, well, yeah, I really care about that. And this is how I think, you know, me being a role model for people or showing that we're embracing this could really support that. So look for the areas of common ground. What you can do then is cultivate an attitude of cooperation between you and the person or the people that you're negotiating with. And it will start to quash some of the feelings of opposition that might arise when you're going head to head. So that is tip number 1. Tip number 2 is to do your homework in advance of the discussion. This particularly works if you've got the opportunity to prepare. So if you're negotiating on the spot, you might not be able to do this. But if you think this is going to happen in a meeting or a conversation, you're going to be able to do this. And the way to do it is to think about all the tough questions that you might get from that person. And so you can do this in a couple of ways. One is you can do what Sarah did. So you can put yourself in their shoes and think, okay, so I don't know, let's go back to the previous example. So they might say that my work can't be done in that amount of days. They might say that this is going to create a precedent for other people. So put yourself in the other person's shoes and like brainstorm all the different kind of questions they might come up with. That's kind of one approach to it. The other is to go really random. So don't take the empathetic, what might they be thinking? Just think about what are just really hard questions that they might get. So we're going through loads of change at the moment and this just isn't possible. The senior person in the business doesn't support it. So kind of put some really random tough questions in there as well. And then think about what your answer might be to those. There's some approaches to this called question burst, which might be a squiggly career tip that I might do soon. So again, we'll link to this in the resources so that you can see it. But it's really just about being prepared, putting yourself in their shoes, thinking about all the questions that you might get so that you are on the front foot and you've considered some scenarios or some ways that you might respond to that in advance and you don't sort of freeze in the meeting.
One thing I would say on that is if you are going into a negotiation and you've prepared, it doesn't matter how much you prepare, something could happen that you'd not anticipated. Don't feel under pressure in a negotiation to answer everything in that moment, in that one conversation. I think sometimes, especially if you are somebody who thinks things through and prepares a lot, which I always would be, then, you know, when something kind of comes a bit left field or just you hadn't expected it, there's sometimes a temptation to think, I need to know how to answer this right here, right now, or I need to know what I think right here, right now. I think it's absolutely fine to say, oh, that's really interesting. That's not something I'd considered or I've given much thought to. And it's okay to go, let me go away and think about that. And can we chat again next week or can we chat again tomorrow? You don't need to complete a negotiation or complete a conversation around a negotiation in one sitting.
Yeah.
Actually, I think probably the harder the negotiation, the more conversations it takes. And sometimes I think I've gone in with a bit of a mentality of like, I've really prepared and then expected everything to get resolved in one conversation. Whereas I think over time I've become more pragmatic and probably realistic to go, okay, this is going to be a number of conversations. And so let's just see how the first one goes. And then I'll prepare for the next one and just break it down a little bit and not expect too much of myself, I guess, in that one conversation.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So tip number three is about two acronyms that I actually got taught when I was at Procter & Gamble. So one of my earlier career squiggles was working for Procter & Gamble in sales. And they gave us negotiation training there. And it was obviously, it was very sales focused. So it was about kind of, you know, selling our products to buyers and overcoming objections and all that kind of stuff. And they talked about these two acronyms that stuck with me. One is ZOPA and the other is BATNA. And so ZOPA is ZOPA, and it stands for the Zone of Possible Agreement. And BATNA is BANTA, and that's Best Alternative to a Negotiated Agreement. Let me explain them because it'll probably make more sense. So the Zone of Possible Agreement is, if you're negotiating, this is almost like, what's your point that you were willing to go to? So let's say it's budget for a project, for example. And then what's the other person's budget that they might be offering? So I might say, well, you know what, I want 50 grand for that project launch that I'm going to do. That's what I think I need for the resource and the marketing or whatever. And I think that other person's thinking 20. That person's mentioned that in conversation. So the zone of possible agreement is somewhere between 50 and 20. And it just gives you a sort of an area to get, negotiate within. The other one, that can just be useful for you kind of framing, basically. The other thing is BATNA, Best Alternative to a Negotiated Agreement. This is about making sure, it's sort of like you're planning A and B, basically. So if I don't get what I want, so 50K, let's say I'm going in to negotiate 50K. And let's say the person says, well, we've got absolutely no money. You're not going to get any money, Helen. So 50K is just completely unrealistic. What you want to think of is, okay, well, what's my best alternative to a negotiated agreement? So they won't agree to that. They haven't got any money. So what I might do is I might negotiate for two people on secondment in my team. So that's not kind of money that they've got to find, that's resource. And so it's about going into a negotiation, absolutely knowing the zone of, you know, possible agreement and what you're shooting for and going after your primary goal. But it's basically like the backup plan. If it's a no and you can't get to an agreement and then you just can't get your primary goal, what's your best alternative? And having that in your mind so that at the point at which you can, you feel like it's not kind of going the way that you want to go. And I think that is a very, that's going to be different for all of us. And it's very subtle for you to make that call, but that you know that you could, you've maybe got your backup plan, your best alternative to negotiated agreement that you could put on the table for discussion. I think it's quite a skill to be able to do it. It definitely starts with the thinking. So even if in the room you're like, oh, I don't know, when can I bring my BATNA out? And definitely don't say, I've got a BATNA. I don't say it. But I think at the very least, do the thinking. If I can't have this, what else could I maybe negotiate that might bring me some way towards the outcome that I wanted?
Yeah, do you know what? I think I've worked with one person in my career who I would almost describe as a professional negotiator. Mm. She worked in procurement and she like negotiated kind of big partnership deals for the company I was working in. And I was really lucky that I just got to be in the room with her once when she was going through these kind of negotiations. And I was just like watching in awe, you know, and you're just like, yeah. Oh, this is like a whole other level in terms of just, and she did it so brilliantly and eloquently and elegantly, completely in the way that you would want to. At no point did it ever kind of lose control or get aggressive or anything like that. And I think that's because it was really her super strength.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of her thing that she brought to those conversations. So the other thing that can be useful is find, if you spot people in your organisation, maybe who are in jobs that just necessitate a lot of negotiation, like procurement, like sales, I think sometimes, spending a bit of time with those people or even asking those people for their kind of words of wisdom can actually be really useful. Because I remember, I think that was a really important kind of tipping point for me in terms of seeing that lady in action and just being like, oh, okay, that is what amazing looks like. Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to quite be you, but I could be half of you. which I think is probably, like, genuinely, that's probably my level of ability, capability is probably about half what she was. She was that good. So tip number four, separate information from influence. This is a particularly important point if you're negotiating with somebody who's more senior than you. I think often when we're negotiating with senior people, almost everything they say can come across as all being facts. Mm. Like, this is all, as soon as someone says something, it's like, well, this is true. And it's just making sure that you're kind of pausing to really reflect on, is it their point of view, which is still valid, or their opinion, and that's still useful to know, or is it actually information? So if I was negotiating for a four-day week, for example, if somebody then said to me, he was more senior, my boss at the time, oh, well, people just don't work four-day weeks. It's just not a thing that happens. Okay, is that actually true, or is that just that person's perspective? Or they might think it's true. They might not have seen that other people work four-day weeks, but you might actually know that people do. And so it's just making sure that you're kind of pausing for thought, really listening to what people are saying. I think that's probably the key in these conversations, because when you are with somebody senior, it's always hard, isn't it? Like, if they're your boss, you know, hopefully you respect them and you want to listen to what they've got to say. It's just make sure you're really like listening to the words they're using, the way they're framing their kind of response and the way they're negotiating, to just get a sense of how much of this is just their point of view and perspective and how much of this is about the organisation and something that is hard to deviate from. So I think you're trying to get how much room for manoeuvre is there here, both within the from the individual, but also room for manoeuvre in terms of the actual facts of how something happens within kind of an organisation.
Also, a question to ask yourself is whether you would respond in that way if it was somebody else. So if I was asking a peer about going 4 days a week and they said, oh, well, no one does it here, I might challenge that and say, well, okay, well, why do you think? I might ask some questions, basically. Whereas if I'm thinking, well, I'm not doing that because this person's senior, then what you can see is that your negotiating ability is being weakened by your perceptions of their influence and their seniority. And that's the reality. Like, we're not saying it's really, really easy, but if you really believe in something and you really believe that it's worthwhile negotiating, just make sure you're not just backing down because you're perceiving someone who's more senior is telling you facts when actually it's just their opinion. Try and lean appropriately into the challenge, you know, with those some open questions. Can you tell me a bit more about that? What's behind that thinking? Whatever the right questions at the time, but don't automatically back away because someone senior has just expressed an opinion. Try and subtly go back with some questions to get to the facts and the information.
And so number five is push for a fast yes rather than a long no. And I think this is really good advice. You know, I talked before about you don't always need negotiation to happen in one conversation, and that's definitely true. But I think the point here is about getting an indication as early as possible in terms of, does this feel broadly likely? And so my example here is while I was at Sainsbury's, I wanted Sainsbury's to support me in becoming a professional coach. So I wanted to go off and do some coaching, learning and development stuff, like training, and actually become qualified. And Sainsbury's had done various different coaching things in the past with people, some stuff they'd done internally, some stuff they'd done externally. And I sort of, as I was asking for that, and that was kind of in negotiation, the thing I wanted to get a sense for was, does this feel like it's likely? Do I feel like they're going to support me with this? Because I understood that they weren't quite sure exactly how they were going to do coaching, how they were going to support it. But actually what mattered to me initially was, okay, but does it feel like you are going to get to something at some point, or actually has coaching been deprioritized as something that you want to invest in? That's the kind of the really critical question. And so actually it took me quite a long time to get to a yes on that. And I did get to a yes. But the reason I think that I did and that it was worth it over that period of time, and when I say a long time, probably I reckon more than 6 months it was between the first conversation I had and actually getting the yes, was very early on. I did get positive signs from both my manager and the HR people that I was talking to, was like the inclination and the willingness to find a solution I sensed was there. And that's a bit about just like intuition, judgment, how much you trust people, you know, those kind of things. And I had actually got a backup plan, which is the BATNA thing, I think, of going, well, how long am I prepared to wait? What solutions am I prepared to look at? But I got to a kind of fast yes in terms of intention. And then I got to a really long yes, ultimately. And that was fine. And I think that's also understanding that sometimes negotiations do take time. You actually, I remember having to come back to that conversation. Literally every couple of months, I'd pop up like a really like annoying little meerkat. Back again. Let's chat again about the coaching, shall we?
And that would have been a waste of your time. So if it was a real long no, that would just keep popping up. Would have been a complete waste of your time. So it's my manager at Virgin used to do this brilliantly. Sometimes you can do it if it feels right to ask for a scale. Like say you're having a conversation with someone, say it's funding for something or other, and you can say, they might say, oh, well, it's, you know, not right now. And you're like, is that a yes or a no? I don't know. So a good question to go back to there would be, okay, like on a scale of 10 in the next 6 months, how likely is this? And if they're like, well, you know, 6 or 7, just not right now, it is then worth you being the little meerkat that Sarah was and popping up again. But if they say, look, to be honest, Helen, 2 or 3, I just don't think it's going to happen. That's the point that you need, that you may need to make a call about whether you try a different approach, but know that you're getting a pretty strong signal that this might be a very long no.
Yeah, and I think there's a good article from American Express that we're going to put in the resources about just how to quickly get to that yes.
Yeah.
I think it's just about asking some smart, and I would say actually you've got to ask some direct questions,
yes.
Which isn't always necessarily my strong suit, but I do think, you know, you can talk more conversationally, which would always be my preferred kind of style. But it's knowing when you do need a direct question, which is almost like not an open question. It's quite a closed question. It's almost like the scale thing is the answer has got to be something between 1 and 10.
Yeah.
Or there has to be a bit more of a yes or a no. You are trying to pin somebody a little bit to going, you know, that might even be their perspective rather than kind of information. But that is really useful intel for you to kind of build from and to be realistic about, because sometimes you negotiate and you don't get what you want, but it's better to work that out sooner rather than later. And then you can start working around that, thinking about alternatives rather than waiting and then just being really disappointed. And then tip number 6 is decision maker. Make sure you are really clear about who makes the decision. I think this piece of advice is probably worth its weight in gold for a number of different kind of skills within a squiggly career. And actually, I saw someone do it brilliantly today. Yeah. I actually got an email from somebody that we might be working with for the advertising agency I work in, who we might be developing some stuff together on actually like training and development. And she just wrote a really clear, really direct email to me and just asked the question, like, who will make the decision as to whether we progress? Is that you or is that somebody else? And that's a really fair question.
Brilliant question.
Because I'm a managing director of the company, but I work for founders. So basically she's going, is it me or is it somebody else or is it both of you? But she did it in a way I didn't feel like she was challenging me unnecessarily or being overly aggressive or anything. She was just going, it's almost like, help me understand how that decision is going to get made. Who do I need to influence? And I was just like, oh, do you know what? I rarely see people asking that question. And it's a really good question to ask. And it stops you wasting time.
Yeah.
So let's say I go back to her and say, well, actually, it's not me. It's one of our founders. She'll think, right, well, there's no point in her spending loads of time with me if ultimately I'm not the decision maker. If I say, well, actually, it'll be my founder who sort of ultimately decides, she might want to work with me a bit to get to a good proposal or something that we think will be useful. But very quickly, then she'll want to have the conversation with him because she'll go, OK, well, that will then help me get to the kind of the yes or no quicker, back to kind of the previous point. So I think it's OK to ask if you're not sure. Sometimes I think, you know, when you're doing, often I've negotiated for like training stuff, is your decision maker your boss or is it HR?
Yeah.
Or is it both? Especially if you're in a kind of bigger organisation, I think that can be really relevant. And that's not always the same in every team, I've found. So some teams, it's the manager. Some teams it's HR, sometimes it's a combination of both. So just like figuring that out. If it's budget holders, Helen's examples on if you're asking for cash, again, just knowing how that ultimately gets to a yes or no is just really helpful. So I think that's it's a really good strategy and a question. I don't think I've ever asked it.
It's really nice and succinct. It's lovely.
But it was just so interesting that I got it in my inbox today and went, oh, yeah, that's really good.
We're doing a podcast on that today. And you mentioned influence there, and we talked about information and influence earlier. I think this negotiation and your influencing skills do go hand in hand. Mm. We have done a podcast on this. It's podcast 68, and it's how to be influential. So if this is particularly maybe like pertinent to you right now, and you haven't memorised every single one of our 92 podcasts, then go to episode 68 of the Squiggly Careers podcast and maybe have a listen to that one, because it might help you as well. So let's just recap then on the six tips that we've got for negotiation. The first one is to look for common ground rather than entering a position of conflict. The second tip is to do your homework, prepare those tough questions. The third is to think about your Zopa and your BATNA and go listen back if you can't remember what those acronyms stand for. The fourth is to separate information from influence. The fifth is to push for the fast yes rather than the long no. And the last one is be really clear on who is making the decision. So we hope those tips have helped you. Please share this podcast with somebody if you know that they've got a big negotiation coming up, because it might be something that could help them. Thank you as well. You know, we say it quite often, but it's so important. Everyone who spends the time reviewing us, I did a bit of a post on Instagram recently with all the 5-star reviews, and we don't take them for granted. Like, we appreciate your time doing the reviews for us on podcasts.
Not at all. It's the best part of my day.
It's amazing. So yeah, we really don't take it for granted. We really appreciate it. Your comments are, it's so interesting to hear how helpful this is to people, and whether you stick us a review on, you know, iTunes, which helps us to reach more people, or you drop us an email at getintouch@amazingif.com. We read all of it and we really, really appreciate it. So thank you for that. A couple of other things just to make you aware of. We are running an event in August, on August the 8th. It is Growth Mindset in Action. It is in London. We are looking to do events outside of London. We obviously do events in Amsterdam as well, but this one is in London. If you want to come along, and if there are still tickets left when this podcast goes live, then head over to our Instagram page. In the bio of our Instagram, there's a whole load of links, actually. So if you click on our the link in our bio, it will take you through to Eventbrite, where you can find the tickets. And I'll also, just to make it easier for you, when I post a description on our new website, which I'll come on to in a minute for this podcast, I'll also put a link in there if you fancy coming along to Sarah and me running our Growth Mindset in Action session in London on August the 8th. Head either to the website www.amazingif.com and look for this podcast post, or click on the link that's in our bio in Instagram. And as I've just mentioned, website, we have a new website. Hooray! It's been a bit of a project, let's say that, for various various different reasons, but it is now live. We have been through it ourselves, but I think we've been so close to it. If you've got feedback, you think it could be improved, we don't have this website to help us. It's really to have resources for you so that you can find information about the podcast, so that you've got blogs that might be useful for you. We've got an online course that we've put on there that we're sort of trialing as we're thinking about how we do more online different materials to help you. So please go have a look at the new website, go click around it. If you spot anything that's wrong, or you think there's anything that's really good or that could be improved, then just drop us an email. We are open to all of your feedback. The what works well and the even better ifs are always super helpful for us. And next week, what are we going to talk about, Sarah?
So we're going to talk about freelancing. So we've had this requested as a topic quite a few times from different people. I think people who are interested in potentially doing freelancing in the future, so have it in mind as a potential squiggly career option. People who are already freelancing, maybe people who part freelance and then kind of do other things as well. Just that whole world, I think, has really exploded over the past couple of years. And I see so many people writing about it in a really interesting way in terms of how do you negotiate and navigate your way, very relevant to today's topic, through the kind of freelancing world. Because, yeah, even the people I see talking about it, it's a real minefield in terms of all the things that you have to learn to do, because often people freelance and they're taking a skill set that they're brilliant at and then just offering it up to multiple companies rather than to just one company. But I think now, and having talked to quite a few people who do freelancing, it's so much more than that. And I think there are pros and there are cons. So we're going to try and get some people who are real kind of experts in freelancers to join us as well, because neither of us have spent very much time freelancing. We've sort of done some kind of extra work and things that would be close to freelancing, but we don't feel like we're real experts in this area, but we do know some people who are. So we'll get people to join us for that, and hopefully that'll be really interesting as a topic. I know that I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll be fascinating.
And over the coming weeks and months, we have some brilliant podcasts lined up for you.
We do.
We've got guest speakers that we are so excited about. We're so lucky. Yeah. We get to go and talk to them, and we can't wait to share all their words of wisdom with you. We've got stuff on LinkedIn. We've just got loads of great stuff in the pipeline. So thank you for listening. Please share if this is a helpful podcast for you. We have got some great stuff that we think you will enjoy too. So that is it for this week. We'll leave it there, and we'll be back with you next week freelancing. Bye everyone.
Bye everyone. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.